this episode is going to be a collaboration that I did with the Pace Morby, talking about a deal where I got paid $3,000 to buy a home that cash flows $500 a month. And so this strategy that we're going to talk about is called the Morby method. And so me and Pace talk about the deal itself. We analyze it. We walk through all the mistakes I made. We walk through some of the benefits to the deal. And if you've never heard of the Morby method, like, this is an amazing strategy, and you're in for a treat. So without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to the Everything Goes My Way podcast with your host, Logan Manzanettis.
Yo, yo, yo. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. So this Zoom is going to be about the Morby method, just helping people understand what the Morby method is. And I want to highlight Logan because Logan's such a big leader inside of our community. Logan, holy crap. Look at this dude. I swear, like, somebody pulled him out of a freaking magazine. Look how freaking handsome he is. Logan is an incredibly intelligent guy. Also, bro, you're doing a great job on your content. What's your Instagram? How can we follow you?
At Logan Lee Manzanares.
Guys, go follow him. He's great. I consume his stuff. He has great advice. He's awesome. He's somebody you should be collaborating with. And that leads me into what we're going to talk about today. Yeah. Is Logan comes into the community and immediately starts taking resources he has, intelligence he has in real estate, and applying it to collabing with sub two students. So a couple of things I want to highlight today is, number one, Logan as an individual is somebody that you guys should be working with and reaching out to as a resource. And then number two, I want to highlight the Morby method because it's something that solves a lot of people's issues where sellers want a really large down payment, but they're willing to carry a smaller portion. This is a strategy that you'll see more and more and more of. It's frequently utilized in multifamily, right? Big, big, big purchases, $10 million, $20, $30 million purchases. A lot of times sellers understand that financing can be really tricky for those transactions. And so you'll see it a lot in multifamily. Okay. But in single family, you'll start seeing it a lot more frequently, especially as we educate and help the masses. So, Logan, let's break down this deal, bro. Tell me a story. Where did it start? Where did the lead come from? Who did you partner with? All the things. I'm going to shut up and let you talk.
Only for a second, then I'm going to bring you in here. So to set the story is, this deal would not have happened without all the Zooms Pace you did on Morby method. This strategy was not nothing I've ever done before, never even heard of. And this deal that we're going to talk about, we had initially had agreed upon this deal in a totally different structure, was not Morby method. And so this deal was done with another sub two student, actually, and the name is Keto. So if you guys don't know, Keto is like literally like an amazing human being. He's got an amazing story, so good that he wrote a book about it. So if you guys don't know, Keto is like, definitely connect with him. And we had done a couple deals together, like as partners. And then he brought me this deal where he had a hard money loan on it. He couldn't get out of it. And he wanted to get rid of it, but he wasn't going to be able to sell it. But he needed to like pay off his lenders ASAP. Like, he had balloons that were coming up. And so we initially agreed to buy this from him on a cash transaction. Like, I was just going to pay for it in cash, and I was going to come back behind and actually basically do like a really quick burr. I would refinance it, so that way he could get out of these hard money loans. And we agreed on a purchase price of $200,000 because he said the home was worth about $220,000. I was like, okay, I'll come in with about $20,000 of equity. And after thinking about it, we were actually sitting in Dallas. We were at a cleaning conference. So if you guys don't know me, my wife, she actually runs the company, but we own a residential cleaning company. And we're sitting at this conference, and I'm sitting there talking to Keto on the phone while my wife is out there networking. And I'm like, oh, I just remember watching a Zoom that pasted on this thing called Morby method. And so I kind of walked him through, I fumbled over my words of like, what do you think about this potentially? What if I paid $220,000? Like, I got to send my timeline. Like, I can't do this in 2 weeks. You probably got to give me 4 to 6 weeks in order for me to close this loan, but I could actually maybe put a little bit more money in your pocket. And if you're willing to carry that, carry a note in second position, then we can make this happen. And you can actually get paid more, and you get paid over the course of time. And so he was like, okay, sounds good, I think, right? And so I had no idea what I was doing. I was just was like, I heard this in a Zoom.
But that's the great thing about this is, like, people go, okay, so I heard the information, but what's next? Oh. Right there, that's the what's next. Right there is literally going, I don't know everything I'm doing, but I heard it on a Zoom, and I'm going to apply it to something. It's the only way to learn. And that's the big step that a lot of people have a hard time with, is like learning a new strategy and then going, okay, well, I have something I can apply this to. Worst case scenario, I screw it all up. And Logan, I know you know a lot about real estate, but you at the time didn't know much about the strategy. So you go,
nothing.
I'm just going to fumble through it. And even though you, in your mind, fumbled through it, you probably sounded like a real estate god to the seller.
Yeah.
Did the seller have any indication that you had never
done more than strategy? I knew more than he did. And that's it. Right. And I knew this much. That's it. But really, I was solving his problem. And ultimately, you said this so well. It's like, you can never say the wrong thing to the right person. And that's really what it was like. I was in a position to try to help him. He had to get out his hard money loan, and there was no way he was going to be able to do it. And he was.
So you had a seller that had a hard money loan. Was the story that the seller was getting ready to fix and flip the property, but he got in over his skis. He was maybe in too deep, and he goes, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I got a hard money loan.
He thought he was in it. So he, amazing investor, literally an amazing deal finder, amazing negotiator, amazing manager. He just has no credit. He has no ability to qualify and get out of these loans. So he did a great job of getting on the front end, but then he basically ran out of timeline of how was he going to get out of this bad loan, right? So that's where it came in, and he's like, okay, like, this deal sounds good, but can you give me $15,000 like next week? That way I can pay off this one lender I had. So it sounded like he actually had multiple loans that were coming due, that he wanted to pay off his hard money loans. And so I did, right? I paid off $15,000 right away. We actually put it through, we called it our earnest money, and used that earnest money. So I paid him the earnest money. So let me back this up. There's a lot of mistakes I made in this. And like, I'm not trying to be like, I did not do this perfect. There's a lot of things I look back on it that I would do differently. However, I had a lot of trust with this individual because we had actually done deals together, like we're partners on other deals, that I did things that most I wouldn't recommend necessarily doing with a total stranger, someone who you don't have.
And one of those is you came out of pocket $15,000 for earnest money so that you could
straight to the seller. So that way
you went straight to the seller.
Yeah. And he used that money to pay off a loan before he even closed the transaction. Right.
Love this. Okay. So guys, this is step number one. Don't ever do that.
Don't ever do that. Yeah. So I'm going to share everything, the good, the bad, ugly. Right. And, I the marketer in me is like, we got paid $3,000 at closing, which we'll get there. Right. But there was also a lot of mistakes. I definitely,
Logan, here's the thing is like let's talk about why that's not a good thing. Right. Cause you did it one, because there was a level of trust. Two, you understand the mechanics and you knew this was going to be a deal regardless. But when you're a brand new person, you're listening to this, why should I never send money, like earnest money, directly to the seller? Why is that a problem?
Yeah, because they could just run away with it. And you want a third party, you want an intermediary. And that's what a title company is, or an escrow company. Or you can even send it to an attorney, I guess, if you're in an attorney state. So
this is an interesting question, right? And maybe it's because you didn't have it under escrow, but I'd love to hear why. Because I've done this too, right? I don't do it often. I probably do it maybe once a year, where a seller goes, I need $1,000 today to satisfy some problem. And I'm like, I can't wait to go through escrow or title. I have to go directly to the seller. Or there's been times where we have somebody moving out of a property we're going to close on, and they go, we need you to put the first and last month's security deposit on our new place as part of the purchase price. And I go, we just go straight to the apartment complex, cut a check, and it's outside of escrow. And it's kind of it's always a weird scenario that we have to do it under.
Yeah.
But you took 15 G's and gave it directly to the seller.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was a level of trust there, which is very rare, because most of the time when you're working with a seller, it's the first and last time you'll ever work with that seller.
Correct.
Why didn't you just wire the 15 grand to title, have title sit on it for a day, and then wire it to Keto? Was it because of the level of trust?
Maybe just ignorance, because I guess when the money sits in escrow, like that money's sitting there, like no one can use that money. And so he needed that money to go pay off a lender like today. Like, so he went and took that money and he paid off one of his lenders with that 15,000.
Love it. Okay, cool.
Right. So I think I heard you talk about this once. It's like, sometimes you got to like understand the situation and do things that maybe a little more risky, in order to get the deal to go through. And again, this is like, maybe not the right message depending on where somebody is at, but I guess in that situation, like I trusted the situation and I was actually okay. Like if the $15,000 didn't come back, it'd be like, well, it was worth it based on what I believe that the outcome would have been.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I think I talk about this a lot with lawsuits, right? Where a seller will start ghosting you. You're under contract with a seller and the seller starts ghosting you and somebody goes, what should I do? And I go, well, how much are you going to make? You go 30 grand. Okay. Well, it's probably worth you putting up some money to risk that it's not going to go anywhere, even with a lawsuit or an attorney. Yeah. But when people go, oh, well, I'm going to make $3,000. I'm like, that's not worth any risk at all. Okay. Don't do that. Seller needed $15,000. Your job, Logan, is as an investor is to constantly solve seller's problems. So you go, I can solve this problem. And based on my outcome or my benefit, I'm willing to solve this problem right now to make sure the seller's taken care of so that I have the result that I want as well.
Yeah. And so that was the first piece of the transaction. Then we got a PSA, a purchase agreement set up and got all that piece set up. And then at that point was like,
damn, Logan, he's gangster. Did you guys just pick up on this? He sent $15,000 before he had a perfect purchase yeah. and sell agreement.
I did.
I mean, a level of trust, bro. This is an important thing. Levels of trust, right? So in a normal situation, this is why we do these, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Correct. In a normal situation, I would never do anything for a seller unless I had a purchase and sell agreement. And then the other thing that you got to pick up on this is that I would never send money to a seller without going through a third party intermediary. However, the reason Logan did this is because he had a different relationship with that person. So remember, understand the rule and then make a judgment call based on the individual circumstance.
And so then, so the second piece of doing the work method is that we got to get a loan, right? And so then at that point, I have the PSA. So now I can take that to lender. I use my investor loan. So again, another resource that lo and behold, we got from this group. And
how did that work out, by the way? My investor loan, was it good? Were you treated well?
This was my third transaction with them. So I've used two other transactions. So this was the third one. And yeah, so we already had a relationship. We got through the very first transaction. So if you guys haven't done a loan, like you have to give all your experience, credibility, all those other things. So it takes a little bit of process to get it, your first one set up. And then now I can just go in there and get a loan faster. I should say it's not like
okay. Let's talk about this for a second. Cause this is an important thing for you also, Logan. So Here's what happens with myinvestorloan.com. We've used them for now over a year. We use them for our fix and flips. We use them for our BRRRR deals, right? So refinancing out into long-term 30-year amortized loans. And they're great to work with. The challenge is that they have a lot of people in our group and, you know, other people that we refer them to. I'm not getting paid by my investor loan, but I enjoy working with them. And so it's kind of the same thing with like Anderson Business Advisors, is that I referred people to Anderson Business Advisors and then I got a lot of people that got mad at me. And I was like, I'm never going to refer another business until I've used them for 6 months or longer on my own. And so once we did, we started working with them. But the problem is there are people that get rejected from my investor loan based on a couple of different circumstances. One, maybe they like filed bankruptcy 17 hours ago, right? That's probably problematic, okay? They also have never done a deal in their life. That's also problematic because my investor loan, a lot of times will base your loan and your rate on your experience level. So what I'm finding a lot of times is that people will go to myinvestorloan.com to secure money and either A, they get the money, right? They go and do the deal and everything's great. Or B, they get rejected for one reason or another. If you guys get rejected from myinvestorloan.com for whatever reason, it doesn't mean you're actually rejected. It just means that you need to bring on a partner that you can leverage their experience. So somebody like a Logan would be a really great resource. He's already gotten secured with my investor loan. So you could go to Logan and go, hey, Logan, I've got a deal, but I've been turned down. Will you be my sponsor on the loan if I give you a portion of the deal? This is what I'm doing right now. I have a lot of people coming to me and going, hey, Pace, because of your balance sheet, your liquidity, your credit score, and your experience, you can get the lowest rate, saves me a lot of money, and I currently can't even get any rate because I can't get secured anyway. So if you guys need help with stuff, Logan is an amazing leader. He'll underwrite deals with you. He'll partner with you. I don't know if Logan wants this, but if I were you guys, I would call Logan and go, hey, will you sponsor me at myinvestorloan.com? Whether it's like the one in Fort Collins I'm doing, I sponsored the loan and I became 50% owner of the fix and flip. So we'll split the fix and flip 50-50 because I was able to make that deal work, whereas they couldn't have on their own. So it's a really great strategy. It's part of the Gator lending strategy of utilizing a resource to make sure a deal has happened. And the resource is your ability to sponsor somebody else's loan. So I just want to let you guys know that that's a pretty powerful thing that Logan just said, that if you guys get rejected from whatever lender, you have a hard time getting a good rate, Logan is a really great person to go and leverage his experience, his balance sheet, his liquidity. his credit score, et cetera, to get a deal done that you otherwise could not do on your own.
Yeah, 100%. And that's, I've watched you doing that. And I had a conversation with Brandy, who's a substitute student who's on our team. And I was like, we need to do what Pace is doing. And like, we have that, all that stuff that you just talked about. Like, we have that, that resource, and we'd love to help people out in that situation. Because we've
how been can people get a hold of you, Logan?
What'd you say?
How can people get a hold of you? Just Instagram, or do you want to give your phone number out? You want to give your email?
Instagram or Facebook? I'm active in the Facebook group inside Instagram, and yeah, just reach out to me there. I respond to all my messages. So
amazing. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we got the loan, right? And so when it comes to Morty Method, if you guys have followed Morty Method, then you guys know that the deal is very contingent on what the appraisal of the property is, right? So like, we can agree on that we think the property is worth this, but let's say that we think the property, like again, in this case, we thought the property is worth 220,000, but what if the appraisal come back at 200,000 or 190,000? All of a sudden the numbers change. And so again, another mistake I made is that we made this whole agreement based on the purchase price that we weren't even sure if it was going to get appraised on, right? Because we were trying to push the purchase price. That way I could get as much money to the seller as we possibly could.
Okay, let me pause here again, because this is the third mistake that Logan made.
We should just call this the mistake, the Morby Method mistake.
I freaking love this. God, but this is the thing, guys. You have to understand, like, you got to go and make mistakes. You got to get out there. What I love about Logan's mentality is he sitting here telling his friends and people, like, I'm going to go get a house in Arizona. He wakes up one day, he goes, man, I haven't done anything to do that. I'm going to go solve that today. Right. He's one of these, like, we all have those moments where we say, here's my intention. Doesn't go anywhere. But you got to wake up one day and you just go, all right, well, that was fun talking about intention. Didn't get me anywhere. I'm going to take action. So action takers are people who put themselves in these situations. So the third thing he did wrong, okay, that I would advise you guys against is what I would normally do is I would get a purchase and sell agreement, step one, then open escrow, step two. Take that contract as my title company or my closing attorney is pulling a title report to make sure everything's clean and clear and all that kind of stuff. As they're doing that, I'm simultaneously submitting this to myinvestorloan.com and figuring out what they would appraise it for. Once I know that it's going to appraise and the deal is going to work, then I would be willing to wire 15 grand to the title company that they would then disperse to the seller. So Logan did a lot of things backwards, but guess what? He still accomplished the same effect, which is great.
Got to the finish line. And the property, ironically, actually appraised for more than our purchase price. So we kind of left appraised for 225, and our purchase was 220. So we left a little bit on the table, for lack of a better word. So yeah, so we got it appraised. Everything on that process went through.
So they appraised, do they appraise it as is, or do they appraise it as here's what the ARV is going to be?
So it's a cash flowing property. So there's a renter in there.
No rehab.
No, it's turnkey.
Okay. All right. So you have a 220 purchase. Is that right?
Yep.
220 purchase. You get appraised for 225. It already has a cash flowing renter in there, which is amazing. No rehab. You then get a loan secured at what dollar amount? How much money did they give you?
$176,000 was the note, and the interest rate, I don't quite remember. We just had a couple. It was 6.5 or 6.75, somewhere in there. It was the one of maybe the worst times to get a loan in the last month or two, but that's what it was, right? So it was 6.8.
Well, here's the thing is that people need to understand this is like, Logan, you've been in real estate for a bit, so you understand, you know, 6% interest. People think it's diabolical and horrible, but it's kind of historically always been around that. I mean, our parents, when they were buying houses, were getting interest rates at 12 and 18%.
Yeah.
Guys, we are so spoiled in this country with low interest rates, like 5 to 7% interest is actually not horrendous. It's just that we've been so spoiled. And if you have not made money in real estate in the last couple of years, man, you've been just chilling on the sidelines. That's all there is to it. You basically have had free money. So does the property still cash flow even at 6.5% interest?
And that's the question I ask. I think people get so fixated on this over here. They're so fixated on interest rate, but like, does it still cash flow? Does it still make sense even with a 6%? Does it still make sense at 10%? Does it still make sense at 20%? Like, if it still makes sense, then why not go through with it?
Okay, so you get $177,000 from my investor loan, which means that you have a gap of roughly $50,000. So what do we do with that gap in the Morby method? What did you do? How did you structure that?
Okay. Another mistake. Ready?
Yes.
I brought it out of my own pocket, right? I just came to the closing table with that money because we had it. In hindsight, I would have probably borrowed it just to keep that liquidity strong for other deals that I have going on, right? Because we always have multiple deals going on. And if we're the ones who are qualifying for loans, we need liquidity, as you talked about before. And so in the future, I'll have somebody be like a transactional lender and allow them to come into the game, use their money, let them play, and keep the cash in my reserve accounts. That way I can continue to sponsor more loans and continue to go out there.
Ooh, I like that. Okay. Let's dig on that for a second. So people understand. Here's the thing. When you guys are sponsoring, right, in the Gator Tribe, when you're sponsoring somebody's loan, what happens is a lender will go to a Logan or to a Pace and say, hey, we need to know four things. We need to know what's your credit, what's your experience, right? What's your net worth? When you're doing multifamily sponsoring, they're going to want to know your net worth. And then also they want to know your liquidity. They want to see how much money do you have in the bank right now? And does that justify us giving you a loan? So when Logan uses that $50,000 to go out and fund the second portion of this, the down payment essentially, when he uses his own money, that means he's pulling money out of his liquidity account, which then harms his ability to go sponsor other loans, right? And so that's what he's referencing. He's saying, well, in hindsight, I would have just used a transactional lender that comes in and brings the money in temporarily for a day or 24 hours. So you fund the money yourself. So did you end up having title and escrow refund that to you after the transaction was done and creating a second note? What did you end up doing?
Yep. Okay. Are you ready? You ready for a mistake? I don't even know what mistake we're on.
We're on mistake number four or
if
five.
If anybody in the chat knows what mistake we're on, please type it in the chat. I have no idea, right? Okay. So we couldn't close the loan as quickly as the seller wanted to. So I had to extend it out a couple of weeks. I can't remember exactly what the reason was, but he's like, I need another 15,000.
So now you've covered 30 grand of the seller's situation because he's like, he's got these bad situations going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. So wired another 15,000, right? But maybe that might be the last mistake I made. I think maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But
I'm on mistake watch right now. I'm looking for the next mistake. I'm hoping we get to five, maybe six.
All right. So now I have 30,000 directly to the seller in his pocket, outside of escrow, all the stuff. Okay. My investor loan, I need to bring 38,000 ish to the table. And so all in, I had $68,000 that was out. Right. And so then when the appraisal came through, lending approved everything, closed the transaction. So here's what happened after the transaction closed. Again, maybe a mistake on this back end too, is that after the transaction closed, I don't know if everyone understands this. Actually, I know most people don't understand this because I walked through somebody yesterday on a potential mortgage method deal. And what happens when a transaction closes is that all those liens that are on the property, they get paid off, right? So any sort of liens against a property, whether it's an institutional lender or a private lender, doesn't matter. They all get paid off before the seller actually gets their money. And so I can't quite remember exactly what all his notes that he had out were, but he ended up profiting $77,000 after all the notes were paid off.
So it sounds like he had about $100,000 in liens against the property.
Yep.
And I could be wrong here. Yep. Maybe it was less because you gave him $68,000. You gave him $60,000 essentially. No, you gave him $30,000 to him directly.
Yep.
Plus you had my investor loan wire $177,000 to escrow. So it was $200,000 total, right?
Yep.
So out of that $200,000 total, that paid off all his liens, everything. And then he had $77,000 that was basically everything. The dust is settled. Everything's done. He's got $77,000 sitting there in profit.
Correct. Right. And so at that point, our agreement was that he was going to pay back all of that $68,000 first.
Mm. Okay.
He's going to pay it all back first. And so he did. He paid back that whole $68,000 first. And then that left about $67,42, I believe, is what the actual number was. And our agreement was that we would actually split that. We would split the, like, whatever the profit was on that. Just like, it was my incentive to basically move from our original deal. Going back to this full circle, our original deal was that I agreed to, like, I was just going to pay for it in cash. And then I would basically do a burr. But I was like, this doesn't make sense for me. I'd have to go through double closing, all this other stuff. I was like, how about we do this? I was like, and if we do it this way, I can actually pay you whatever the difference is on that as a way to incentivize him to go through this mortgage method rather than me having to do a basically a quick bird.
Love it. And okay.
So after that $68,000 was paid off, there was $67,042. That's what it was like left over. And then we just split it. So he took $33,71 and I took the other $33,71 and I put that in my pocket and I had the property.
Okay. So this is where he accomplished like a very clean, you know, they call it the infinite Burr method when you can do a Burr method and you get all of your money back.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very rare in Burr, but in Morby method, it's not that rare. It's actually very, very common. Yeah. And Logan's, this is your first Morby method. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I'm working on another one.
And you'll, I promise you from this Zoom, you're going to do probably 100 more. So, yeah. So essentially here's what happened. He could have, okay. He could have gone to who else is in here? I know Logan doesn't need the money, but let's just hypothetically say who in here in this Zoom right now has $68,000 they could have loaned to Logan for a week or so while he waited for the escrow to close.
Yeah. And looking back on it, Pace, I would have used that $33.71 that I made as profit. I would have much rather given that to a transaction lender as their profit instead of me keeping that. Like, I didn't need that money, but I could have used that as a way to continue to have deal flow, right? I'd much rather have more deals than that $33.71.
Right. So there. He tied up this is, guys, this is the advantage a transactional lender brings to you, right? Is that you can be in the middle of multiple deals rather than saying, oh man, a lot of my cash is tied up in this one freaking deal. I'm kind of locked in. And depending on who you are, you know, Logan lives in Bozeman, so they have $1 billion. So you can't live in Bozeman without having $1 billion net worth. That's what I've heard at least. So it's not problematic for him necessarily, but a lot of your clients in transactional lending that are running a Morby method transaction, there's a pretty significant benefit for you coming in for that $68,000 for, let's say, 10 days or so, receiving that $3,700, whatever, and Logan never having to put any money into the deal, what have you, right? So you did it. You got all your money back. Yep. You got all your money back, and you got paid to freaking do it. So does the seller have a second lien position against the property?
Yep. And so let's get into that. So that's the first half. So there's two parts to the Morby method. And the first half is just that front piece is like, can I get into the deal with no money or maybe little money, or in this case, actually get paid, right? I would say that was like the ideal Morby method deal, kind of like very similar to the bird. Like you want to try to get as much of your money out as you possibly can. And so that's the first half of the deal. The second half is, well, what is a cash flow, right? He's got to make sure that we want a cash flowing asset. And so our PITI on this property is $1,459. And that's our first position. That's my investor loan. Second position is a 0% interest, $150 a month payment. So we just literally made it $100 a month. And all of it goes towards the principal, which the principal is $40,000. And so with that being said, what's that? $1,450 plus $150 is $1,600, right? But the reason why I really like this property is that, or this deal, is because that tenant is, his lease comes to the end. His lease comes to the end at the end of the month. And we offered actually a lease option to try to like move that needle on that property, and he declined. And so we actually will just turn it into a corporate rental or short-term rental, and we'll be able to make, you know, $3,500 a month on that. And then of course we'll have a healthy cash flow.
So your net cash flow, and that probably be somewhere around $1,000 a month net.
Yeah. Ish. Right. But we have an asset that we got paid, and you say this a lot, and this is the reason why I truly admire you and really adore you, is that like I will do things for this story. Like I manifested this when I thought about that. I was like, oh, this is going to be a great story. It's going to be an amazing story. Like, how can I tell someone, how can I catch someone's attention when I say, I just bought a house? I got paid to buy a house.
You got paid to buy a house. Right? That's the most gangster statement ever. People are like, oh man, I got into this deal with no money, no credit, no credential, bubble. It's like, no, dude, I got paid to buy a house that's already cash flowing that I didn't have to put any renovation into. On day one, it was cash flowing.
Yeah.
That's a pretty powerful statement.
Yeah. So honestly, that's like a big reason I did it, and the benefit that I got paid, and the benefit that it's cash flowing, like those are all just benefits, but I would have done it without that, just to say I got paid to buy